I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Kami Archai joins me now. The founder of New World Theatre returns with a world premiere show co-directed by Chelsea Haberlin, New World's new associate artistic director. It's called Deuced Friend, and I'll get Mr. Chai to tell us about this show that through dance, poetry, and music explores the line between secular and spiritual, and how that line can be delineated in discussions about us and them, or how it can be blurred by a show like this, as Mr. Chai looks to understand faith and art by merging his practice as a theater artist and his spiritual practice as a Sufi, joined on stage by members of the Vancouver Sufi Center, fellow theatrical professionals, as well as the Canadian Memorial United Church. The show explores themes of compassion, heritage, and community. The show runs at the Historic Theater at the Culch the 22nd through the 26th of March. Visit tickets.theculch.com for tickets and information. Kami Archai is an award-winning actor, director, writer, and producer. He was born in Iran, raised in the United States and Britain before he moved to Vancouver at the age of 11. He has degrees from the University of British Columbia. Previous works include Ali and Ali and the Axis of Evil, I Am Your Spy, A Day in the Life of Mordecai Vanunu, and many other works staged and published. He joins me in the midst of rehearsals. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Kami Archai. Mr. Chai, good morning.
Good morning. Hello.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. And I wanted to thank you for not only getting my name right, but also my co-director, Chelsea Haberlin. And it's really funny because I'm used to getting my name incorrect, but one interview I had recently, they got my name right and then called her Chelsea Handler. I get to make fun of her a little bit over that right now. A little bit of levity.
Is she a comedian?
Chelsea has a good sense of humor, I would say.
There you go. So I tried giving a précis of the show in the introduction, but it's probably best to if you tell us what happens in this piece, Deuced Friend.
Sure. There is a storyline. It's really interesting because for me, one of the artistic joys and challenges has been how do you do something that's Sufi spirituality is very much, it's similar to Buddhism. It's very anti-intellectual and non-linear. And then Western theater form is very linear and intellectual. So that has been a great artistic challenge to meld those two. But any good dramatic piece needs to have a through line. To build on, like a storyline that the audience can follow. And the story of Deuced is loosely based on the former elder or master of the particular path that I'm a student of, initiate of, that he was remarkable in that at age 26 he became the elder of the path in Iran, which was unheard of. Usually elders are actually elders. And not only did he revive the order, but he spread it internationally. We have people from all backgrounds and all nationalities and Sufi houses, truly globally. There's not one continent, maybe except for North Pole and Antarctica, that he hasn't hit. And at the same time, he was also very devoted to working within the community. He was actually a psychiatrist and one of the lead psychiatrists in Iran at that time. So quite a remarkable life, and we follow loosely. It's sort of not, I didn't want it to be a biopic, but it does loosely follow the trajectory of Dr. Javad Nurbakhsh from when he first kind of caught the fever for what we call the beloved, and then eventually became around 16, and then chronicling his life up until 26 when he became the master of the path. And that's just one through line layer, but we build a lot of other layers onto the show as well, including Rumi's poetry, which is the most familiar to the Western world, and also one of Rumi's masters, Attar, who wrote the iconic Conference of the Birds, which has appeared in Western theater in a lot of different formats and Western art and literature. So, for instance, the story of the bird, Conference of the Birds, is woven into it. And we have an eclectic mix of music, from both traditional Iranian music to jazz to flamenco, One of our actors, Sam Bob, is has a Haida background, so he does this beautiful First Nations song from the Plains tribes. So it's quite eclectic that way.
And you've been a Sufi your whole life, have you?
No, I haven't, actually. Not in terms of being a student on a particular path. Sufism is really woven into Persian culture.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you don't grow up in Iran without being Sufi poetry. It's the poetry of Rumi and Attar and Bayazid and on and on, Saadi, Hafez, as well as music inspired by that poetry, which is forms the basis of traditional Persian music, is very interwoven into our culture.
So I'm wondering, like, if it's such a part of your background, your life growing up, becoming a student of that. I guess you have to be a certain age to say, not buy into it, but to sort of to really think about it. Because I mean, we can be raised whatever religion our parents are, but mm-hmm. to really get into it as you have. I would assume that was in one's formative years or a little older than that.
I think so. I think everyone has their own path. For me particularly, my parents, born in Iran, we're majority. I was born into the Shia Muslim faith.
Mm-hmm.
But my parents were always spiritual, but never, they actually said to us, study it and make your own choices. So they were quite liberal in terms of thinking that way.
Mm-hmm.
And that combined with the fact that I became an immigrant at a young age and was always trying to fit into whatever place I was in also made me, I would say, sort of a little bewildered spiritually, because I was always trying to figure out, well, where is my home and where is my place? So, and a part of my younger life was also rejecting the culture I came from, not just because that's what we do anyway when
mm-hmm.
we're young.
Mm-hmm.
So like the Alex P. Keaton thing.
Yeah.
But also, you know, all the negative stereotypes that you have to deal with being a foreign kid. And on top of it, you know, Iran and this time in history doesn't particularly, you know, when you're a kid, you don't use that as a badge of honor
yeah.
in New York or Vancouver or wherever. So I hid from it and sort of looked for other places, like I said, Buddhism, Christianity, so at an older age, I decided, particularly because our order also requires you to have a living master,
uh-huh.
and a living master, a living elder in the path, not unlike if you join, you want to get a kung fu and karate and you have your sensei, it helps you from when you've been feeling lost for a long time, stay on a particular path and have that backing, and that did come to me definitely at an older age. You're absolutely
yeah.
right about that.
And so at what point then in one's life do you, because you've also pursued this path as an artist, which you've
mm-hmm.
touched on earlier, how different that is from, say, the spirituality that you have. And so to put both together must be interesting for you, but now you've involved other people, you've involved these folks that you're working with, but
mm-hmm.
but soon an audience.
Mm-hmm.
That must be fascinating, interesting, terrifying at the same time to put that all out there, is it?
It is, but and I'm being very sincere about this. Part of what I'm learning on the path is also to have certain amount of detachment from things that we do. That doesn't mean we don't do them with passion, but to try to not annihilate the ego's relationship with it, because the fear is usually comes from the ego and what that might mean for me and my reputation and my future. And if I'm a bit detached from that and focused from the work, that's been the difference for me of when I did doing a Sufi play now versus when I did one for New World, you know, 15 years ago, is now I'm actually in a devotional practice as well. Because for me, just as much as being a professional theater piece, it's also an opportunity. The musician in Sufism, musicians show devotion to the beloved and their master through playing music. This is how I play music, so I get to marry those two things. And I'm certainly not trying to. I don't represent Sufism.
Yeah.
I'm just a student of it. It's my interpretation. But what I can tap into, what I feel comfortable sharing with the audience, is that the message of unity, of oneness, of being kind to each other, regardless of whether you have similar spiritual beliefs or even if you're an atheist, I think those are things that are a service to the community in this day and age where there's a lot of negativity and friction in the discourse that we hear or we see on social media. If some people might think of it corny, I think of it as essential service to humanity. That's always been at the core of New World, to not put a kumbaya lens on everything, but to remind everyone that compassion, unity, love for each other, respect for each other, these are also strong forces that need to be reckoned with. And love isn't always, just accepting anything that you hear and being, okay, there's a line in the play about what about, am I supposed to love, Vlad the Impaler and Genji's son? And that's not the point. Love has many sharp edges as well. I think it's about the intention.
Yeah, but, however, in this interview and in the course of a night at the cult, attendees will see you, I guess, as a representation of your work, of your faith. That's one of the goals. I mean, you've already touched on that. I'd like you to expand on that. It's just how you would like it to be viewed in the culture, in society today, and to people that will attend Deuced Friend at the cult.
Yeah, I mean, I can't explain. I've ever since childhood been a political animal, and as much as through this practice, I'm trying to detach from that as well.
Yeah.
I can't. I mean, we only try, right? We're not. We don't always succeed, and it might not be wrong anyway to keep that part of me. So politically, it's important for me right now, as it was when I first started New World, to bring something. I mean, Sufism, which is very, very, I'm generalizing because there's many different orders, just like Buddhism. There's many different approaches and schools. But from what I understand, that one generalization that I can make, it has the complexity and depth that it has. And for most people, it is an offshoot, a mystical offshoot of Islam. So in our order, anyway, we have pre-Islamic roots. But inevitably, people are going to make that connection to Islam. And I think right now, being a creature of the West and my society, it is important for me to show, in my own small way, negate any oversimplification that happens of people that follow not just the Muslim faith, but follow any spirituality. Not that there's a dearth of spiritual voices out there. I just think a lot of the voices that are given focus to are, with certain institutions, there's also power, and power corrupts. So sometimes the mask of spirituality and religiosity is used for the same thing capitalism or communism used it for, which is power and greed. And I want to speak to the other forces that are out there, and without saying that also, I am a victim of power and greed myself. So as much as there's an honest discourse of everything that's out there, I'm not saying it's the other, I'm saying it's within us all. But for now, for this 2 hours that you sit with us, let's focus on the other side of things. And so that is a political element of countering both what I feel is a anti-Muslim, anti-Middle Eastern sentiment, and also an anti-spiritual sentiment. And the trick is to do that without exoticizing or being too Orientalist or being too being an apologist or any of those things, which I'm trying not to be. Whether I succeed or not remains to be seen.
So it's one thing to oversimplify spiritual practice, to simplify faith, but there has been, and I don't have to tell you this, resistance, a mistrust, a hostility towards Eastern practices by those of us in the West. And so in addressing that, I guess that's a thread that runs through the show as well, right?
Yes, absolutely. We have a character who's actually very, very, we see a dual story of him as a young man trying to find a spiritual home, but being very skeptical. And then as an old man going right back to that place he was of skepticism and trying to, almost like the Christmas Carol, trying to remember the earlier journey of his youth and why he arrived at the place he was. And I think, actually, I think when it comes to any form of power, be it political, religious, spiritual, skepticism is healthy. That's something when you asked me earlier, Joe, about, you know, what's the difference when you're older versus when you're younger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not, you know, I'm 48. I just turned 48 last week or so. And so that's old enough that I've been duped, you know, I've been betrayed, I've been beaten down, and so I can tell you that my current spiritual master, Dr. Alireza Nurbakhsh, I was more than skeptical before I met him. And when I met him, that skepticism was, for me personally, erased. But I am happy that I had that skepticism because it makes me feel more confident in terms of what I'm pursuing right now. And one of the tenets of our order is that, and there's no expectation that I have an allegiance to that spiritual master, but it's not like if you change your path, you're going to get excommunicated or you go to hell or anything. There's a poem we have in the play where one of the characters says to his spiritual master, well, what if I betray you? What if I find someone else? And the answer to him is then go, because it's about the common destination. It's not about how you get there. That these people don't set themselves up as godlike. Mm-hmm. They set themselves up as simply people who are just showing a way that they have found through their experience. And that's where the trick is. Where sometimes you look in history and those people are constantly practicing themselves because they can easily tip over to be their ego taking over and becoming demagogues. And their followers can also turn them into demagogues. So that's also something that we're exploring in the characters of this play.
So I mentioned off the top that you have folks from the Vancouver Sufi Center and the Canadian Memorial United Church as part of this show. I'm curious to know, what sort of discussions are you having? I mean, you're the co-director, and so they obviously have questions for you in terms of where to stand, where to go on stage. But are there sort of spiritual questions that you guys hash out?
Absolutely. Though it's remarkably, even the professional cast and the musicians, we didn't do a traditional audition process. I invited people, and more important than seeing whether they're good actors, I mean, everyone that Chelsea brought in to audition were, that was a de facto, that they were experienced performers. We had a little conversation about what they thought about the draft of the script, what they thought about engaging in a show that was so obviously, for me, the originator tied to a spiritual practice, and to let them know that even if they felt uncomfortable or disagreed with that, that they were still welcome to participate as long as they were willing to engage in a discourse around it. So, and the same for the Sufi members themselves, in terms of, for them, the discourse has been understanding the process of theater and how theater works. And theater has a lot of similarities. People who are involved in theater, we have a lot of ritual.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of devotion to the story. We want to please the audience. So there were things that they were easily able to connect to, but there's also new rituals and practice that they had to learn. And the Canadian Memorial Church, the history there goes back. I have a dear friend who's recently been become a reverend in that church, and another who's going to play the cornet in the play. And our spiritual discourse goes back for many years. In fact, I knew them when I met my current spiritual master. And I find Canadian Memorial has very, very similar teachings and understandings of spirituality in terms of that we do in our order. There's some differences, and it's really fun to talk about these things. You know, one of the things I'm trying to do in the play is to tell the actors, when you recite this poetry, when you talk spirituality, don't make it so precious. Like, people who like to have spiritual discourse talk about it like they're talking, like people who are passionate about hockey.
Mm.
It's just what we talk about,
yeah.
Right? And in some ways that makes it more human and more palatable, I believe, to people's ears. Not to say that we're going to gloss over the beautiful poetic moments and the musical moments, but to also show that element of it as well. So I think I answered your question in a roundabout way.
Yeah. So you founded New World, what year was that? 19...
Well, technically it was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
That was, I think, from when we became a not-for-profit society. I think it was 1993 or 4. It was when I was doing my bachelor's degree at UBC that I formed it with a bunch of university friends. One of them being Tom Schulte, who now teaches at the University of British Columbia in the theater department. He was a brilliant, young mind at that time, a little older now. And we just our first show was on the Freddie Wood stage, which the university graciously gave to us. It was called Evening in a Strange Land, which was a puppet show by Bahram Izai, who's a living Persian theater and film master. And we transposed it to living actors on the stage. And I had found a translation of it in English in the UBC library. So I was inspired by that serendipity.
Yeah, and so the New World has grown, obviously. You left it at one point, and now you're back with this one show. 20-odd years ago, could you have imagined where it's gotten to?
No, I mean, I hoped it. I'm very grateful to Marcus Youssef, and then before him, Adrian Wong, who ended up being the triumvirate before I left of artistic directors. And then also all the many actors and designers and stage managers and technicians who really put a lot into young companies, and you don't hear about them. And they work for free, and they work for nothing, and all of those people combined have helped New World grow into this place now. I mean, we're rehearsing. I mean, it's been wonderful. I haven't had to hardly do any producing element on the show. I mean, I've helped, but there's been a team who's taking care of that. We actually have a rehearsal hall. You know, when I was doing it, we would be always borrowing and stealing spaces and writing grants at the same time. So I've really been given the honor of being able to really focus on the work and provide leadership where I can. And it's a wonderful feeling. And I think part of that I owe to one of my early mentors, a gentleman by the name of Dennis Foon, who was one of the founders of Green Thumb Theater for young people, who told me from an early age, you know, he said, don't make New World about you. It'll grow into something if you make it about something more than you. And that was a sentiment that from a very young age really sat well in my soul, just like that's actually similar to Sufi thinking.
Yeah.
Now that I think about it, and it has worked out that way. So no, I couldn't. I hoped, but I couldn't imagine that it would actually be here.
And reflecting on the past 20 or so years of New World and just the theatrical community here, I mean, it has grown, hasn't it? Is it a better place now than it was then?
I think so. I mean, there's always a lot of peaks and valleys in artistic practice, but by and large, there's the support that the community through different, particularly through municipalities and through Canada Council for the Arts and BC Arts Council doing what they can. Sometimes they've had their hands tied by provincial government policy, but given, you know, BC unfortunately has very low per capita support for the arts,
mm-hmm.
but the BC Arts Council itself tries to use that as wisely as they can and have. So between those two levels of government and general audience support, it's really grown. I come back into it, and there's so many people that I don't know now who are creating so much great work. And, you know, theater is one of those things where it's a lot of teamwork goes into it, a lot of investment goes to it, and there is investment from the audience. So it's always one of the hardest of the arts practices, mm-hmm. because, you know, an audience member, you have to really invest a lot to go to the theater. Right? And we know that. But the payoff is also amazing. And that's the risk an audience takes. Sometimes, you know, it's not good. Just like you see a bad movie sometimes.
Right.
It just doesn't take as much investment to see a bad movie, and it's easier to walk out of. But theater has a payoff that I really truly believe nothing else can pay off. The live communion, seeing so many people. Not just in our play, we've got a band of musicians who've come together. You know, we've got the actors, we've got the designers, and they all have to meld together. And if it works, it truly is magic. And the more people we have out there trying to do it, the better it is. And the more of a chance the audience is going to hit on some good stuff. I mean, I'm thinking of right now one of the colleagues that I grew up with, New World and Electric Company, around the same age.
Mm-hmm.
And you think about Jonathan Young's and Crystal Pite, the dancer, they're Betroffenheit right now, and the impact that's having on anybody who can see it in its own way, in its own corner of the world. And that really speaks to, I think if you look at the growth of, for instance, companies like New World, Electric Company, and many more, it also speaks to the growth of the new world that a lot of the young theater companies are getting to inherit.
Camier, it's been great talking today. Thanks for your time, and break a leg, as they say.
Yeah, I appreciate your interest.
Deuced Friend is at the Historic Theater at the Cults, the 22nd through the 26th of March. Visit tickets.thecults.com. Camier Chai joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plantum.